हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Paramatma Sandarbha Adhyayana 1, Adhikarna 3, Description of the Gunavataras. Anucheda 8, page 25. The controller of the three gunas, Sa Adhya Purusha, became Adbhut Brahma, Sata Dritihi, for the creation of the universe, Asya Sarge, by Rajaguna, Rajasa, in the beginning, Adao, as a pastime for situating himself in the gunas. He became Vishnu, being situated, sthitao, by Sattvaguna. Sattvaguna, however, is not directly mentioned in order to say that it is inappropriate to indicate that Vishnu, who is completely beyond the gunas, has even an indirect relationship with the gunas. Vishnu is the giver of results when he acts as the protector of the jivas. Kratu patihi, Vishnu's form of yajna, kratau pati, lord of sacrifice. Lilavatara is mentioned in the second canto by Brahma. He is the protector, Setuhu, of the Dharma of the twice born. He became Rudra for destruction of the universe by Tamaguna. In this way, creation, maintenance, and destruction takes place. This verse was spoken by Drumila to King Nini. In Moksha Dharma, the appearances of Brahma and Shiva are also mentioned. At the end of Brahma's night, the Lord produces a lotus out of his unlimitedly beautiful mercy. Brahma, receiving the Lord's mercy, appears in that lotus. At the end of his day, his son, Shiva, the destroyer, appears from his forehead when Brahma becomes angry. Mahabharata 12:328-15-16. The appearance of Vishnu is described in the third canto. O Vidura, Vishnu entered the lotus of all the planets, which reveals all the enjoyable objects for the jivas. Brahma, known as self-born, composer of the Vedas, appeared within that lotus. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:8-15, Udriti. This universal flower is the universal Virat form, or the gigantic form of the Lord in the material world. It becomes amalgamated in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, in his abdomen at the time of dissolution, and it becomes manifest at the time of creation. This is due to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who enters into each of the universes. In this form is the sum total of all the fruit of activities of the living entities, conditioned by material nature. And the first of them, namely Brahma, or the controller of the universe, is generated from the lotus flower. This first-born living being, unlike all others, has no material father, and thus he is called self-born of Swayambhu. He goes to sleep with Narayana at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. From this description, we have the conception of three, the gross, Virat form, the subtle, Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma. 3:8-15, purport. So the Virat for the Lord, that's considered gross, right? Because he's dealing with the external energy, like that subtle Hiranyagarbha, or that creative potency, right? And the material means before the original, it comes from him, and then the material creative force, right? So you have the So he then, through his energies, then there's the creative force that then, using the formulas of the Virat Purush, then Brahma then manifests things. Yes?
In Brahma Samhita it's mentioned also three, but then Virat is mentioned Vairaja. Is it the same?
Yes, same. Virat Vairaja. I think Virat means great, and Vairaja, I think, may mean half man, half woman, or something like that. But I'm not sure. Like that. It's different synonyms of the same thing. You're just bringing out either different aspects, or you applying the grammar differently from a different angle. Yes?
Also, the question is, when the day of Brahma is finished, then is it going back to Garbhadakashaya Vishnu, and at the end of the life it goes into Karandakashaya Vishnu? Is that the case according to the description?
From what I understand is that that all stays in place. The lotus stays in place and all that. Just that whatever's inside may go back into the Lord. And then in the morning it's created again. Because Brahma sleeps in that. Because I think in here is that you're dealing with, it may be an overlap of destruction or creation. Does that make sense? Because it's one principle. And so then you're dealing with the aspect of the destruction, meaning there's the end of the day of Brahma, then there's the end of his lifetime.
Right.
You know. So he goes to sleep with the Lord, but at the same time as everything winds back up. You know, into Mahavishnu. But at the same time I would be thinking it's going back into here. Where was that? Where was that? The page before. Oh, he goes to sleep in the right time of devastation. There's another creation. He's born in this way. Yeah, because this gives the idea as he goes that, and then there's another, when there's another, he is born on the lotus. You know, that'll be a new universe. So the point is, the function of the three Vishnus is basically the same. They're, you know, very specific within it, but it's the same principle. You know, it's like those verses on Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And they'll be talking about him as Sesha and as, yes, Balaram and this and that. So the point is it's all one process. But just different features may be brought out depending upon what they're, you know, how they're explaining. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Purusha, who is Narayan or Vishnu, entered in possession of his full powers, Pravi Vishat. The lotus constituted of the planets, Loka Padam, meant for producing objects for the jiva's enjoyment, Sarva Guna Vabhasham. Brahma appears in the lotus, placed there by Vishnu, in order to carry out creation from elements already there, like a potter making pots out of clay. The same is described in other places as well. But he's already making things out of what's already there. He's not producing the ingredients. Only Vishnu produces. That's why he's the maintainer. Right? He's the original. Right? Because Brahma and Shiva can't produce the elements. Yeah. The one supreme Purusha, accepting the gunas of Prakriti, known as Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, for creation, maintenance, and destruction, is called Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. The best results for the devotees will come from Vishnu, or Shuddha Sattva body. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.23, Anucheda 9. Thus it is said, I offer my respects to the Supreme Lord, the tree of the worlds, who is Brahma, the cause of creation, Shiva, the cause of destruction, and independent Vishnu, the cause of maintenance, and who, though one, after dividing up pradhan, increases into three branches, gunavatars, and then into extended branches, prajapatis and manus. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.16. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada.
Can we say that from this description, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.16,
yes,
gunavatars and prajapatis and manus, except for Vishnu, would be on the in the same category?
Same category meaning?
Meaning, like the demigods kind of thing?
Yes, yes. Means in other words, there's Vishnu, and then there's everybody else. That's basically, yeah, what it comes down to. You know, like that. But the same side, there's Vishnu, and then he expands as Brahma and Shiva to take care of the creation. So they're actually doing his work, and this way they're non-different from him. Right? They're doing the work. You know. But at the same time, it's then expanding from them come Prajapatis and Manus. Okay. They're further.
Further down the line.
Yes, they're just down the line.
And when we were speaking in Brahma Samhita about the prototypes, demigods.
Yes.
Prajapatis and Manu also has them, have them?
I'm not sure exactly who all is there with Mahavishnu. But, whoever it is, it's enough to put together the primary creation. Because it seems there's sages there, there's, demigods, it's a whole scene going on there. Right? Because then they do that original yajna. And then from that, everything's created. So. The cause of manifestation is grossly divided into three worlds, the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems. And then it broadens into the cosmos of 14 planetary systems, with the manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the supreme root. Material nature, which appears to be the cause of manifestation, is only the agency or energy of the Lord. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10. Mayad yakshena prakriti suyate sachara acharam. Only under the superintendence of the Supreme Lord does material nature appear to be the cause of all creation, maintenance, and dissolution. The Lord expands himself into three, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, for maintenance, creation, and destruction, respectively. Of the three principal agents controlling the three modes of material nature, Vishnu is the Almighty. Even though he is within the material nature for the purpose of maintenance, he is not controlled by the laws of material nature. The other two, Brahma and Shiva, although almost as greatly powerful as Vishnu, are within the control of the material energy of the Supreme Lord. So they're not independent. He's independent. He has nothing to do with it. But someone has to take care. It's his potency, so he comes to take care. But he's not controlled. Does that make sense? Yeah. So Brahma, being a living entity, Jiva and all that, then naturally he's then under the modes of nature unless he comes to the perfectional platform. But still he's working with those modes. Right? Then Shiva, even though he's in his own category, he's not like the Jivas, like that, but he's also not like the Lord, because then he's consorting with the external energy. So in that way, he'll be controlled by it. Right? And that. And then Vishnu, then he's beyond. He only interacts with his internal potency. Right? So the internal potency then transforms, and then you get everything else. Yes?
Brahma is like a position.
Brahma is a position. It's a post.
And Shiva is not a position. It is
a position. But there's a tattva that takes care of that position. But occasionally, I think it's mentioned that when there's a jiva that's very super qualified like that, then they may take the post of Shiva. Like that. But I think it's not a standard thing. Like that. But that would be within the universe, the devata.
Yes, not the Vishnu.
Yeah. So, yeah? Tripat means the three branches, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. The Lord is described as a tree, with the guna avatars as branches. Brahma spoke thus to Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Anuchita 10. The appearance of the three guna avatars to humans in the world is described. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, spreading fame, seeing that the three worlds like fuel were burning because of the fire emanating from the sage's head by the fire of pranayama, went to the hermitage along with Gandharvas, Siddha, Vidyadharas, and Nagas. Udriti. It is advised, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.1.22, it is advised in the Vedic literatures that one should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the universe and master of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. He is known as the Supersoul, and when one worships the Supersoul, all other deities, such as Brahma and Shiva, appear with Lord Vishnu because they are directed by the Supersoul. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.1.22 purport. The sage mentioned here is Atri. Maitreya thus spoke the verse.
So Maharaj, Brahman Shiva, they are like assisting Vishnu.
Yes.
And it is their service to come to the,
yes.
To, it's like a service.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're doing so. All the demigods are doing service for Vishnu.
Yes.
They're all doing. Now, how conscious they are of that and absorbed in the Lord, that's another thing. Right? So we see Shiva is a great devotee, so then he's always absorbed.
Yes.
Brahma may or may not be a great devotee. Yes. And, you know, like that, he's always a devotee, you know, some variety.
Yes.
And then Indra and them, then they'll, you know, there'll be different levels of neophyte devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So
whether they have that Shraddha,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're taking it that, in one sense, all those who accept the monotheistic, philosophy, technically they're all Vaishnavas, because Vaishnava means one who worships this supreme absolute personality.
Yes.
So technically means all like all the Abrahamic and all, they're all Vaishnavas,
yes.
technically.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily that they have that level of faith that they see that exclusive worship of the Lord over all other things, you know, free from karma and jnana as their goal.
Mm.
Right? So then they'd be classified as ordinary Vaishnavas.
Yes.
Right? So like that, then they would be. Oof. But so we have to see is what's happening. These demigods, because of their acceptance of the supremacy of Vishnu and following the Vedic injunctions, then they will be able to take the positions ruling the universe. Right? You don't give those positions to demons because they'll always take advantage. Right? Yes.
I think elsewhere Jiva Goswami mentions that the Bhakti Shakti is all-pervading. So, like you mentioned, everybody who believes in God, they practice some variety of Bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
But then, to practice Ananya Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti, you have to have Shraddha. Otherwise, you can practice without having faith in the Supreme as a person.
Mm.
You can just, and it is an energy of bhakti, but it's not the same as we practice.
Yes, it's just a different level. It's the just as Krishna is all pervading, so is Bhakti Shakti will be all pervading, and so. It's what makes everything work. So all the karma and jnana work, but they attribute back to the Lord. But even if someone's not so much, but still, then they're worshiping the Lord as the laws of nature, or as Brahman, or as some aspect. And so nothing is working without bhakti. So if someone's not dedicated and focusing and trying to do his best to properly apply themselves to the situation they're in for the particular endeavor, then without that devotion, then you don't get the results. So you see is that everything is actually working by bhakti. But the point is because it can't be any other way, because that's all there is. There's only the Lord and his energies and that relationship between them. There isn't something else. So that's why Maya, the illusion is there, is it covers the living entities because they don't want to see it connected to the Lord. So they're given the opportunity that they can see like that. But in reality, it's not like that. It's all there is the Lord, the living entity, and that devotion. It means there is nothing else. So if you're not devoted to the person, then you'll be devoted to other features of the Lord. Like that. So here then the Virat Rup, then that's what most people are devoted to.
Mm.
You know? And you see as someone who applies themselves, it's always respected. If someone's devoted to their work or their, you know, whatever it is, their passions, it's always a respected platform. Because it's the only platform that works.
Mm.
Right, but it's just not bought so much to the front because of the speculation that it could be this, could be that, the sign, the chance or this or that. So it gets more and more distorted. So when you have the idea that there's a supreme absolute, especially if then already you're on a better path. And then if it's this person, then that's even better. But until, like you said, until we come to Kevala Bhakti, that it's about pure devotional service, then that's where we start the point of Shraddha. So otherwise, before that, it'll be Agyata Sukriti. Right? So, and so that Agyata Sukriti coming from being in touch with Kevala Bhakti will be the most powerful. And others will just a little bit there. Because otherwise, how often are they really surrendering to the Lord? How often are they really committed to the Lord? Right? So you see is that it's not necessarily so much time. Right? Individuals will be more, like you see earlier in the descriptions, then they're all, talking with the Lord, so when they go in and spend time with the covenant, then they're talking with the Lord. But you see, that was with the earlier ones. But with the later ones, you don't really hear of that. Yeah, so I think down to Moses, maybe.
Well, my speculation that Moses is the sanjya between the direct interaction, which is personal, sometimes more personal, sometimes more impersonal. But then after Moses, it's like...
Yeah, then it's more of a culture.
It's basically religion.
Yeah.
The interaction is lost.
Yeah, the tattva aspect is kind of... means if you ask, it's there. Just like even today, if you ask, of course it'll be there. It's about a person. It's about, developing love, about devotion. That no one will deny. Yeah. At least not anyone who's sincere. But at the same time, it's not the forefront of their... it's all about religion and getting the benefits of religion rather than the rendering service to the Lord through religion. Like that. So that's an important aspect, because we ourselves can get distracted by that, in that, like we were discussing the other day about the New Age aspects of preaching. So mechanically, then you're dealing with the same thing, right? So whatever medium you use, it doesn't matter. Someone's doing book distribution, someone's doing Harinam, someone's doing some educational preaching, you're doing the yoga, or that whole scene, whatever it is, whichever aspect of those is there. Some are doing prison preaching or like whatever. But something is there. So all these mediums, it's the direct ones, obviously, are direct. Then the indirect ones, then when you connect it to the Lord, then it becomes connected. And when you don't, then it won't be. So using these as mediums is not the problem, right? Because it's part of the culture. As you can see, it's like we're going through the aspects of drama. Then you see is that it's natural to be used in the Lord's service. That's actually what it's meant for. But you could not use it in the Lord's service. You could get more caught up in the aspects of drama and the techniques and the performance and, preparing and, does that make sense? So that comes down when we're speaking very strongly on these points about, the soft preaching, that it's about the difference between, are we using it as a medium for giving pure knowledge, or is it a medium in which our own attachments become, engaged? It means that our own attachments are the situation, right? So in other words, any of these levels can be used very to a great advantage for preaching if you don't identify with these things. Like we were saying the other day, Ayurveda. If you identify as an Ayurvedic doctor, this is what we do, and it's all about the Ayurveda. And because it's there in the Vedas, it's sattvic, and so it's elevating, and this and that, and that's the focus, then now we have a problem. But if it's a matter of through that you're attracting people and giving them, the pure knowledge, then that takes, then it'll be a medium by which then so many. You know, does that make sense? Yes.
As we saw, the three aspects of kavya, which is clarity,
yes,
and then vigor, and then sweetness.
Yes.
So in hard preaching, there may not be the sweetness aspect.
No sweetness. Yeah. Yeah,
soft preaching, in order to bring sweetness, you may remove both the clarity itself
and the enthusiasm. Yeah. Or in other words, enthusiasm switch. So the one is that there's clarity and enthusiasm for serving the Lord. But the sweetness is gone. Then in the soft, you get the sweetness. The clarity generally has to go because it's not understood. And the enthusiasm for the Lord may or may not be prominent, but there's enthusiasm for the medium. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. That people use these as mediums, it's not a problem. You see some devotees get, you know, good advantage of them, like we mentioned, that some do the yoga studio kind of thing and make so many devotees. While others, you know, in one session, they're already chanting, they're already, you know, taking the shod, they already have some basic understanding. While others then stretch it out because it's more about the yoga and more about the sweetness than about the enthusiasm in Krishna's service and the clarity about Krishna. So that's what we're talking about. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we have to be careful, because otherwise some people are able to use it very nicely, while others don't. They make the mistake. They take the external form and think that's the real thing, when it's not. It's just anything's a medium. You know? You know, it's like, I think, what was his name? He was here. The chairman of the Over 6 Foot Club.
Oh,
yeah, Tirkanama. Yeah. So then, he would just go down and, you know, like sit on the campuses.
Yeah.
You know, that old style, like Vishnujana. He'd stick instead of a rug, sit down like that, right in the on the lawn there. You know, where everybody is in the quad, and then. People would come and talk and like that, and he would then preach. Or when he would travel, he'd travel on the Greyhound buses. They're big buses and like that. And he'd preach to whoever he's sitting next to and stuff like that. So here, using you could say this is another form of bus preaching. Okay, you know? You know, the others use the bus to get around and then preach. So it's called bus preaching. But this is, he's preaching on the bus, so then it's bus preaching. So does that make sense? So the whole point is as long as it's accomplished, it works. So it has to be clear like that, because otherwise sometimes individuals make the mistake that we're saying, oh, all this kind of using the New Age medium is bad. But we're not saying that at all. We're saying is that if you identify with it, then it's a problem. So that's what's happened. We were saying here is that you see is that as Kali Yuga comes in, those before who identified more as with God and servant of God, and then the other rituals were the medium to express that, then it becomes more about the rituals, and then it becomes more about the religion and all that, and then the material benefits they get, rather than the religion is used to serve. Does that make sense? And so then it just gets off track. So we always have to be very, very careful about that. So that's what we're meaning when we're talking about you know, this or about management or that, is that if you get off track, you take that as the prominent, that's what makes devotional service, then it's a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's about the attitude, the mentality. Mm-hmm. And if the mentality is right, then the medium can be used and it can be quite effective. But you see is those who... In other words, those who are effective, you see their mentality is different from those who are not so effective. Yeah. Yeah? So, yes?
It also seems that, you know, when we try to develop a personal relationship with God and His devotees, we have to make a constant endeavor.
Yes.
But then if we install some rituals, once it's installed, that's it. It's perfection. It's running forever. You don't have to think about it. It's all mechanics, basically.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the reason, majority of people, they choose that side because once it's installed, it's running, so you can, you know, you can do
you just get
own,
the benefits.
Yeah, you can do your own business basically.
Yes.
And then, but then getting into personal, it's not that easy.
Yes. Well, it mentions that because you have the aspect of the means if the personal aspect, if that comes natural, then that's always then the recommended position because then it's immediate. Because the whole purpose of all these things is to come to that personal platform, that personal appreciation. So if we do that, it's already accomplished. And so then you just continue that. But if it's not, that's what the whole point of Vaidhi Bhakti is for. Vaidhi Bhakti is to regulate our life so that we're always doing things that are favorable for that personal interaction. But, as Prabhu mentioned, then we need to make that endeavor to do that personal event. That's why then you have prayers. You know, prayers of the acharyas and then one's own heartfelt prayers, because then those give us the opportunity to express that personal aspect. So it's always a matter of endeavor. So that's the point, you know, enthusiasm is endeavor with intelligence. So when we're saying that within the aspect in the drama, that enthusiasm, then that means there must be using the intelligence. So they're enthusiastic, putting the energy, but the energy is going into things that are recommended. All right? So that's why we'll always prefer the recommended, because they will very nicely, are very supportive of serving the Lord. Right? Because as you use things that are more indirect, its connection with the Lord becomes more indirect. It's all the Lord, but the connection to the person, just like we see, Vishnu's there, then he expands as Brahma and Shiva. Right? So they're considered the incarnation of the Lord, but at the same time as they are not independent features of the Lord. Right, then coming down from them will be then the Prajapatis and the Manus, right, and then from there will be coming down, you know, the other, you know, 33 million, like that. So it'll just keep going down. So yeah, each time you take a step away, you have to make that endeavor to bring it back to the person. So that's why devotees always prefer, if it's available, using the direct methods or the, you know, the apurusheyas as the Vedas give it. Because then the form of it's natural, though the mentality may or may not be proper. Right? If it's proper, then it's used in devotion and it becomes very easy. You see it's very naturally supportive. So the same principles that are given in the philosophy are the same principles that make up the form and structure of the aparavidya, right, of the Vedic knowledge.
Yes.
But it's still indirect because you're dealing with the energies. You use it for the Lord. Now it becomes very naturally. And if you don't, then it's just a very pious distraction. Mm-hmm. Right? But then as that becomes distorted, then you get away from that. Then it becomes more and more. So you have to make that endeavor. So the devotees just like that very nice straight thing. And if that's not available, then they'll take the next best. Mm-hmm. They won't just automatically drop down to the 10th option because of their conditioning. You know, that's you know, I like it, I'm comfortable with it. Because then it's about ourselves. And so then, okay, even you start there, how are you connecting it back to the Lord? Are you making that endeavor? And so then the problem comes, if you don't do that, then you're just stuck with, that you're dealing with the external energy. So it's not an ideal position. So that's why then these other things are there. And it's just like, so much preaching is, how you say, you know, there's always the point of bridging the gap, right? You know, how to start the conversation of this or that. But if people are presenting themselves as devotees and all that, then just automatically people have questions like, what's the mud on your forehead or what's with the bed sheets or, you know, stuff like that. So the conversation can immediately start. You don't have to take it all over the universe to get to. So it's just easier. You know, and so that's why it's preferred. You know, if you have something, you can just take it, put it in your mouth, and eat it. That's always better than if you have to, you know, how you say, open the packet and then eat it. Right? Now, what if the packet's in those bigger packets, you know, and that's in a box, and that's out in the garage, you know, then it's just more endeavor. That's all. you know. But it's not that more endeavor is glorious, because it's only the part where it connects to Krishna that's glorious. And so all the other then becomes connected. Yeah, but it's not that you get more. Oh, I'm doing more service, because what I'm using is more far away and I have to make more endeavor. But the point is are you doing that all the time? If you are, then very nice. But if not, then, because otherwise, why is it chosen? Right? Is it a necessity or it's a preference? And if it's a preference, if it's a necessity, yeah, what can you do? You know, you just do it and connect it to Krishna. But if it's a preference, then it's still, you have to connect it to Krishna to get the benefit. So yes, you can connect it, but the point is that you can connect it doesn't mean it is connected. Yes. You know, you say, yes, you can connect yukta vairagya and all that. Nice, okay, but are you connecting it? Yes. It's already taken, as soon as I say the word yukta vairagya, it's automatically connected. Yes. You know, it's one of those, you know, I say...
Magic words,
yes. It's a magic word. Just by saying it, it's done. You know? So those aspects we have to see that point is that's what we're trying to do, by observation, is that you go back in time, there was in people there was a sense of duty, a sense of right and wrong, you know, a greater social, maybe, you know, it may come from a religion or philosophy. Or, you know, the social, whatever it is, construct and all that. But there was a sense of right and wrong, and that we had a duty to perform activities that are right and wrong and better for, you know, so there was more of a, you could say, a pranamoyic kind of thing, or even a manamoyic kind of thing, acceptance of God, doing things like that. But if you're from the West, there's going to be very, very little that, you know, understanding of Brahman, you know, or the soul, spirit, and all that. So maximum you're going to get is some form of theistic understanding like that. But generally, that's not the one that's being discussed, right? So then you're going to get a pranamoyic where, yes, there is right and wrong in society. You have to do good. You have to do nice. So if you're wrong, that's a bad thing. Right? And so then you want to correct yourself and become, you know, proper. So that's the thing. But nowadays this anamoya is becoming much more prominent. Before it was, you didn't talk about that. It means children are in anamoya, animals are in anamoya. But generally your adult society, you know, human society is supposed to be pranamoya. You know. So then, but nowadays it's all about, you know, themselves and being yourself and true to yourself and all this kind of stuff like this, you know, which is fine as long as you know who you are and that, and then you cooperate with everybody else. But here it's kind of like it ends at that point of being yourself. And so then it's your sense gratification, your what you like to do, how you like to dress, how you like to speak. And as long as you're within the circle of, you know, what's socially acceptable amongst those individuals at the time, then, you know, it's sacrosanct. You know, it's just right. And if they tomorrow change, then now whatever they said yesterday is all bad. You know, so, you know, it pranamoya has a weakness in general, but generally it changes a little bit more slowly. But then when you make the center about themselves, and so it's just... The point is this: do you accept that I do whatever I want and don't care for anybody else? And if you do, you all like, then you're okay, and then we in that way have that's our community. So it's not that we necessarily personally interact on the platform of Dadati Prati Grinati Guhyamagi. It's a political position in which we are allies because we're against others. We're not in this position. So because of this, then you see there's no authority. It's yourself. What you feel like is the authority. And anybody else telling you what to do is not an authority. Right? So this is where the weakness comes up, is that there's no sense of, I have a duty, there's respective authority, I do what's right, And so if I've done something wrong or I have a wrong understanding, then being corrected by authority then is appreciated. Because then I could get it together, right, and come to the proper position. So now there's this aspect of the authoritarian, it's not appreciated, right? And so then... So then, before you could push, the goal was, as devotees, is already there on developing love for Krishna, pure devotion. So if you point out what's wrong, then you would naturally think, oh, okay, we have to correct that because it's not in line with pure devotion. But if we identify with it, because a devotee generally doesn't identify with the body and all these things, but if they identify. And there's, it has this weakness of these kind of contemporary flavors of not respecting authority, you know, being about oneself, being about feeling what you want to do, and that's the basis of right and wrong rather than Shastra or even just social tradition. Then the difficulty comes up as they can't appreciate any pressure. So then that system that before could work very nicely, it has to be that's pointed out only because it gets in the way of giving the results. So in other words, if someone's focusing on the results and the endeavor, if there's something wrong in the situation or the technique, you can point that out and then it'll correct itself. But if the focus is not on those other things, then that has to be included in the discussion. But you can't take it for granted that naturally then they're just going to adjust because, you know, that would be the right thing to do. Because they have a different concept of right and wrong. You understand? So, in other words, what's so nice about devotional service, these are the things that you do to get that position, you know, like that. But these things get in the way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I think we discussed previously that Jiva Goswami mentioned, you know, three kinds of bhakti: Aropa, Sangha, and then the Sarupsita bhakti. So then discussing in Aropya, which is, you know, we project ourselves, then he says that it could be Kaitava or Akaitava. So when we project, it's still Aropya, but when we think that everybody should adjust for our own position, that's Kaitava. That is unaccepted.
Yes.
But then if we still project, but then we're trying to adjust for the devotees, for Krishna, then it is accepted. It's not the highest level, but it is accepted. It means we can see there's a progression there.
Yes.
But Kaitava, it's like a dead end thing. It's
yeah, because it's about yourself. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, nice.
We also heard the latest madness brought from L.A. Oh. One devotee came and then...
Okay.
Then LA. What's that thing? Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
One white guy, he declared himself to be black. And then he said that, how you see me, I don't care for that, but you can like openly say it, because I'm black. My perception of I'm black.
Now the question comes, can he jump?
Or whether the blacks accept him.
Yeah, he can only say that amongst the whites. Right?
Even that, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody takes him seriously.
Okay.
But he is serious. I mean, it's a serious, like...
Yeah, yeah.
All these things. ...position in society.
Yeah. You could do all these things, but if you're dealing with... because we have to remember is that one of the four qualities of the conditioned soul is illusion. You know, illusion, cheating propensity, making mistakes, you know, like that.
So there are actually more black people than we see.
Yeah. But then there could also be black people who say, what do you mean? I'm white.
You know, so. But that's what they wanted for centuries, but it
didn't make so make everybody else black. Yeah, so Prabhupada points out is the only universal thing that brings everyone together where there's no discrimination is everyone's devotees. So what does it matter what your body is? Okay, it's black, you know, or it's white. Where does it fit into, you know, what ashram you're in or what varnas you do? What do you do for Krishna? You know, what how do you situate yourself, you know, to do your service for Krishna? That's what's important. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. So he's making a thing about being black. So what? There's so many black devotees, they're not making a thing out of being black. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, you can do that if you want. Technically speaking, only because there's temples on the western side of the San Andreas, it hasn't fallen into the ocean.
Prabhupada said to Bhakti Tirthaswami, before he became Bhakti Tirthaswami, he came, Ghanashyam Prabhu, he came to Prabhupada and said, the devotees are discriminating against me because I'm black. And Srila Prabhupada said, and they can do that because you think you are black.
They can do, you heard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so they can discriminate against you because you think you're like that.
So Prabhupada's point was both you and them on the bodily
platform.
So
yeah.
Don't come and complain to me.
Yeah, because otherwise it's taken that. No, because they're discriminating, they're wrong, but you're identifying that way, you're wrong also. Yeah.
So when we mentioned about a change in 34 years ago, the devotee when they joined this cult, they were more like accepting authority.
Yes.
Having some type of value in life.
Yes.
Even with a little hippie background, but some value were there.
Yes.
Now the value are changed in the society. And there are less respect for authority.
Yes.
So can we say that with that situation, we need more work on understanding the tattva of Krishna consciousness?
Yes.
To,
yes.
To counteract the tendency to less accept authority.
Yes. Yeah. That'd be there. Same time as that, they expect everything's supposed to be very nice because before people were more tough. Now they're more soft or more metro or like this. So it means that balance that Prabhu brought up before about that, you know, the pleasantness of how it's presented, at the same time the clarity that's there and that enthusiasm, that you know, energy to present it, that combination, that's going to work. Now you just have to see, you know, according to the audience, then bring in why we do these things, how Krishna is the supreme authority, and then bring it down from there. If it's just we're authority, then it's why. But it's Krishna's the authority, and then it descends from there. So Krishna's the authority. He is the rules and regulations. He's the ultimate goal, right? You know, processes that attain him, that's a value. Other things we've been doing, they're not getting us satisfaction. Otherwise, why are we showing some interest in something spiritual or in God consciousness? Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of broadening the perspective. It means always these things should be discussed, but sometimes the tendency is just gets down into, you know, probably we mentioned before, just down into that ritualistic aspect. And so we just get into the sadhana, and it's just how well it's done, that's the only thing that matters.
Yes.
The attitude and that's not discussed.
Yes.
Right, even though the point is if you have a proper attitude, you want to do things very nicely, so you'd want to see the sadhana very good. But at the same time, as you might get the aspect where they may, you know, how you say, get distracted or something like that. And so because of that, then they don't, there's a mistake in their practice. So others might point that out, but what happens much of the time is that's all we talk about. We don't talk about the positive side of it and those things. The negative is there just so that the positive goes on. But if we take it for granted the positive goes on, you just avoid the negative. Or we don't even worry about that. No, if it's just about preaching a service, we don't worry about. Then we can sometimes get distracted. We overemphasize something. So there always must be this balance. So then it's just you have to see that the balance is brought out more. Because otherwise, you could go into that and it would be an impetus for people to correct themselves. But now it's not really an impetus. They don't find any inspiration because the point is that if in education you're taking someone's samskaras, when the senses bring information, you know, the mind then picks out uses the memory to find what's the samskar, right? And so, therefore, then if you're, you know, presenting something from a very strong position, they'll go back to their experience of anything strong. And there's a good chance that by the, you know, kind of contemporary cultural environment, they don't have a good experience of that. And so therefore, they're just going to reject that. And what you're saying may be very good, but the presentation, the experience they're gaining won't be good. And so because of that, then it will be rejected. Yes. Even though intellectually, yes, it's correct, but the attitude.
Yes.
So that has to be considered, because the first thing the mind does is sees what is. In other words, we're seeing, you know, in the small circle, the Pramana Chaitanya is allowing you to perceive things with the senses. And then by the, how is it, not Vikara, Vriti, Vishaya Chaitanya, then the mind is taking that form and then going into the memory. Right? Then back into the other aspects of the Pramana Chaitanya, but it's looking for Pramitri. What's the experience? Then that's what's going to be analyzed, is the experience. You know, we're not just analyzing the situation and the facts and figures. We're going to analyze the experience of that. So that's why you can have one situation and two people looking at it or discussing it, and it's like they're talking complete opposites. Because they're going by their experience in that field, not by the field. Their field is perceived through their experience. Right? So the field of action is individual, that I'm going to perceive the facts through that. So that's why the facts are abstract. You know what I'm saying? So people always say, no, we want facts. But which facts are they looking for? The ones that they have an impression in. You give them facts that they don't have an impression in, they couldn't care less about them. They keep digging till they get facts that they have an impression on. And so then they see the field through that way. So, therefore, you have to establish then the point of Krishna and the position of authority, how things work, how laws of nature work, and how all these things, so that those aspects of tattva. So that one sees that there's an importance in that kind of arrangement. You know, and that the authority and all these things are good. And then once they get this, and then they might be looking, they might get in a good experience, then slowly, slowly it'll build. But if they get a bad experience, then again it will go back to their, you know, whatever they felt before. You know, it's just like you see is... something happens in the temple. Something goes, you know, that you would say would, you know, be socially something that you wouldn't consider proper. And so from that, some devotees get worried about it and this and that. Others couldn't care less. And others, they lose the faith. Yeah. So it's just a matter of what's their previous samskaras. Like that, you know, that they become influenced so easily. So that's the point, is that for one is, what are you talking about? It's the material world. Of course there's going to be mistakes. And the other is, no, but we have to be, you know, moral and this and that. And then the other is, it's just that, you know, oh, this is happening. I thought you guys were different. And, you know, so they leave to go back out to where they were, but they already left that. You know, okay, do they move on forward to something else? No. You know, so it becomes. So you have to see is that you're dealing with people's experience. That's who actually the samskaras is what you're dealing with. So when someone hears you, they're filtering everything through their samskaras. So as time you hear is purified, the samskaras are purified, then one is able to appreciate. Right? You know, Krishna reveals, he's telling you, he's super soul, he's trying to help.
So we need to be, I can say, more intelligent.
Yes, we have to be more intelligent. More intelligent, more cultured. Because the point is you can only be strong with someone who's close. You can't be strong with someone who's not close. Well, generally, modern conception is someone who's close, you're not strong with, and someone who's not, then you're. But it's actually, is you can only be, that they'll actually be able to use it. Is that good? Yeah. You know, so I think it was like Advaita Acharya then. You know, Lord Chaitanya is chastising him for that impersonal philosophy. Right? You know, because of the closeness.
If we want to teach something, we have to create the impression first? Or how can we help to people who doesn't...
Like that. Means, in other words, you have to consider the impression when you're explaining things. It's not about creating the impression, it's about Krishna consciousness. But you just have to know is that this is how people function. So therefore, then you have to consider that. That's why you consider your audience. So the idea is that, you know, I said before, hard preaching is, you know, as Prabhu mentioned, doesn't have any of the sweetness. It's just, you know, the facts and figures and all that. And so for those who have that kind of faith, then it's inspiring. Right? Because they already have the samskaras that this is good. But for someone else who doesn't, it won't work. So then soft preaching, then they're considering all their samskaras, though in the process they may lose the clarity and the devotional, you know, drive. You know, the actual, yeah. So enthusiasm means endeavor with intelligence. So you have to use your intelligence to see what kind of thing will work for what people in what situation. Is that?
Yeah, this is the... You know, personally, we found that this is the most difficult part, addressing a mixed audience.
Yes.
Especially if, you know, your audience, they're not from the same background as you are.
So yes, yes.
And everything becomes, like you say, one may react normally, others may react funny.
Yeah.
Some people just, you know, just leave.
Yeah,
they can't handle it, really.
Yes, yes.
Because their impressions, they, you know, in conflict with that, whatever you preach.
Yes. So that's why you have to, possibly, more impressions on Krishna and those kind of aspects to somehow or another create for them impressions, good impressions. So they just don't have. You know, like it struck me is that, let us say, you have an animal, and you come up close to the animal, right? They generally get disturbed. Because, why? What happens when an animal that's not their species gets close to them?
They eat them.
Yes, somebody gets eaten. So, that's their samskar. So if you come close to them, that's the only samskar they have. They don't have that, oh, you people, you may be different. So with time, you'll see is that they get that samskar. You know, just by, you know, over the years, then they come around and they see, and then slowly, they stay over there, nothing happens. So then they get a little closer and a little closer, you know, until they're like this, walking around and checking it out.
When you put food.
Yeah, but food, that's the thing. We haven't put food. Yeah, that's another. But even you put, it still is a slow process. Yeah. You know, so that's the thing. You have to build on the samskaras. So, yeah, it's always good. Yes?
Another point is that usually what happens from external impressions outside of Krishna consciousness, then people move in and they develop easily, quite fast, external impressions within Krishna consciousness, thinking that's it, that's the goal. I've realized the whole thing, and then only some that they go into, you know, internal. Because external, that takes most of the energy of the living entity just to create that, and then people think this is perfection. It is bhakti actually, but it's just an external form of bhakti.
Yeah. Means if the intent, means just go back like you said before, the aropya, where they're extending their own perceptions onto things, is that if the idea is to come to that platform of pure devotion, then it will work slowly, slowly. It's a slower path. It's not as good as, like you said, the Sangha Bhakti, where you're taking advantage of the association and the attitude and the processes so nicely. So then it'll work, because all living entities have an experience of religion in the way of you perform good work, you get good results. You know, even if nothing else, even just on the platform of artha, they can relate to it. It becomes more gross that way. And there'll be also the aspect of detachment or renunciation. They'll all have some experience, though generally it's in negative ways. And so then to be able to put those all together, that those are inherent in bhakti, in a positive way, in connection with Krishna, that may take time, if there's no background. That's why you see is that you'll have some individual that they'll come in contact with Krishna consciousness and immediately become very, very nicely situated. Though someone else, it may take much longer to develop that same kind of attitude. It's just that there's no previous samskar. You know, I mean, we have the Agyata Sukrita, that's the real samskar. Yes?
I observe, when mature devotees, they preach, they start from the consciousness, the chitta aspect, and they focus more on the changing the ego aspect, from being an enjoyer to being a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
They stress the importance there.
Mm.
But when you're new as an neophyte, you start with chitta because it's Krishna consciousness, but we directly jump to mind without going down from the ego. If you change it, then mind and intelligence, then we adjust.
And people
who don't have samskaras, they may not be able to express their devotion properly, but internally the change is already happening.
Mm.
But if we jump from consciousness directly to the mind, externally they change, but to whatever they can, but internally it didn't internalize more.
Mm.
And how they receive it also is very different. If some mature devotee says something and then...
Mm. Yeah, no, it's there. Yeah, no, good point. Yeah, because it's just a matter of just establishing. If you establish nicely and the view and perspective, then it makes it so much easier.
Okay. Can we say that before presenting Krishna consciousness or teaching, we need to establish a relationship with
him? No, it's done simultaneous. Because if we wait until we've established nicely our relationship with Krishna, then we may never preach. So the point is by doing things to please Krishna in the way of preaching and these things, then that Krishna reveals, and that's how we advance. So it's a matter of the two go together. Because if we're servant of Krishna, then we preach. And by preaching, then we become more of a servant of Krishna. So the two nourish each other. Because that point is made very strongly. Otherwise, there's sometimes the thing, I'm unqualified, and then they don't do anything until they become qualified. And who knows when you'll ever become to your standard of qualified. But you see is that the new devotees can have an influence. I think it's mentioned that the Uttamadhikaris, on the platform of Bhava and above, they can bring people to that platform that they're on. You know, the Madhyamas can establish faith like that. And I can't remember what the others. It may have,
Kanishka just give association.
They give association, but still, they can bring you to the platform that they're on. So in other words, you can bring to the platform that you're on. For the neophyte, he has some faith, you know, and he's taking up the process,
yes.
He can get you to accept that much.
Yes.
So that's why a new devotee can bring people to Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
You know, Madhya will be easier, Uttama even more. But so, because you're dealing with the chit potency. So it's not about us, only when we're qualified. It's that Krishna's potency. We're you know, Prabhupada gives the example, we're a postman. So we just bring the post. We don't add something, we don't take anything out. You know, we don't take out the dollars, put in the rupees, you know, like that. yeah, or take out the money and put in an electric bill, you know, your electric bill. Yeah, we don't do that. So, whatever little bit you understand, because it's about Krishna, it's perfect. So that's the whole point, is somebody who takes up Krishna consciousness, there, it's already perfect. It can just, perfect can be more. It's just like, let's say, you're going to cook, okay? And you're situated in the kitchen. Is there a better place to be situated for cooking? No. So it's already perfection has started. Okay. So, yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, many devotees join full time in temple, and then in training they accept the authority principles, and some of them they continue to stay like that because authority principle works and all. But some of them they cannot because of previous background. Is, you know, I'm from this, that.
Okay.
So they are given big zones, separate zones of their own, and they preach there. And everything goes like that. Then, but their position becomes insecure. They don't have equal association, and authority is not looking into certain aspects of their Krishna consciousness. So the life of those devotees become very risky, and there are some mishaps also happens eventually. So what can be done in such situations? How do we balance?
Okay, one second. Haribol? Can you translate?
What he said?
Yes.
Sure. Basically, when a devotee in the initial phase he accepts Krishna consciousness, he accepts authority, but later on, by his conditioning nature, he may not be able to managerially deal with authority. He wants that managerial independence to deal. But how will he maintain the spiritual connection and being managed really, like functioning what is there? Because he wants managerial independence, but in the process he loses that spiritual connection also.
It's just a matter of choice. What do you want? You have to choose what you want. You know, that you want independent. How is it Krishna conscious? You can say as though all this and that. But the point is even you have managerial independence, do you ever not work under someone else? So this idea that I'm independent, don't work under anybody, that's purely material. Right? It seems efficient for you because it gets done what you want to do. But if we're doing Krishna's work, how is it not? And how it'll just be you and Krishna? Where's the parampara? So there's always going to be a connection. You always have to have. You always work under. And you see, that's the first thing. The first point being made in management, in Manu Samhita, is working under the Brahmins. That's the first thing. Before he even gets into explaining how to manage, that's the first thing to be established. He sets up a situation, and he respects the Brahmins, and he has his Brahmins that he follows. So then? So without respecting authority, you can't manage. It's an illusion. Popular, but an illusion. So the whole point is that Krishna is the ultimate authority, and since we're serving Krishna, therefore the principle of authority has to remain. Yes?
I mean, during Srila Prabhupada's time, there were many this kind of incidents.
Yes.
Devotees came and said, I can't work under this, that. So Prabhupada, he had a, you know, like very interesting technique.
Yes.
He said, okay, you can. You independent, okay, go, this is your zone, you develop temple there. Not really, I know, like, real
yeah,
people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, you work under me directly.
Right.
And then there are two categories. Some, those who were sincere, they actually followed, developed. And, the, you know, everything was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And those who just on the pretext, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. you know, insincere, just, I don't want to work under anybody, not even Srila Prabhupada,
mm-hmm.
they just fell away.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you are sincere, Krishna will help. But then, you know, Brahmana should be there. It's not possible to work under nobody.
Yeah, there's other, have to. But if you want to do samanyon, then take up something that is new. Establish something like he did there. You know, it's like you want to work on your own, start a new project. Don't try to take over the one that's already there. You know, otherwise it already has authority. You know, go out, start a new one. Yeah.
There is the ultimate solution for the question of authority. It's when we get married, we are learning.
Yeah, what is the ultimate authority? The all-pervading, all-knowing, ultimate authority. Yeah, that's the whole point of that, is that what is not realized in brahmachari life is then realized through grihastha. So in other words, if you realize by hearing and seeing, then it's the work is done. But if not, by experiencing, then it's done. It's not that they don't know and they haven't seen. It's just there may be an understanding, but there's no realization. So that's the whole point of the Vedic system, is everybody comes to the point of realization. Like that. You know, that's the whole idea. Yes, so one always has to work on. And even not, like Prabhupada says, you go to the forest and all that, you still have your mind and senses, you have to... They'll be in charge. So you're always a servant. That's the thing. The living entity is always a servant. So even if you try to be independent, you still have to serve the senses. Yeah, so, yeah, never works. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.